Everybody, welcome. This is David Heath, Farmer Dave, and you are at the Geeky Crossroads, where different parts of genre fandom come together, and we talk about it. Well, I talk about it, and I like to think that in my imagination, you're talking back to me, even though I can't hear you, because, you know, some of the best, I think, podcasts and or you know, YouTube channels or whatever, it feels more like a conversation. So hopefully that's what you feel. If not, I failed. I'm a terrible human being. But you know what we're going to talk about today? Yes, we're going to be talking about the universe of Alien or Aliens. And the first two movies are phenomenal. You know, I know somebody who doesn't like them. Somebody, literally, even my friends who are not science fiction fans, for the most part, really enjoy these two movies and the franchise of these two movies. Once you get into Alien 3, or at least the version we got, people aren't as united in their love for it. In fact, I believe Alien has like a 93% critic favorability on Rotten Tomatoes and 94 with audience, and Aliens has like a 94 critic and a 98. I mean, they're both solid in the 90s. So they're pretty much beloved movies. Know who didn't like the first one? Roger Ebert. And, you know, a lot of when I want to look back on a movie and kind of get the idea of how it was looked at when it first came out, I tend to go to Roger Ebert. He's kind of like this time machine, in essence, but not always perfect, but it gets a kind of idea. Goes on to say, even he thought that scene where Dallas and Lambert and Kane enter the alien spaceship was amazing. And as a young person, and even an older person, that scene has always been sort of the key to me in the movie. Not the chest buster, not the alien gets destroyed by a woman in her underwear with a spear gun, classic science fiction slash monster movie ending. No, that scene, and that is the essence and the heart of at least the first movie. And so what we're going to talk about is, like I said, once you get on to, like, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection, Prometheus, the AVP franchise, there's not as much brand loyalty, but there are some lesser known, at least now, pretty much official Alien properties that pretty much got retconned, that still maybe don't have the widespread admiration that the first two movies have, but are still considered solid. And I want to talk about them. And the first one I'm going to talk about is Dark Horse Comics' Alien series. Now, for good or for bad, we have Dark Horse to credit and or blame for putting Alien and Predator together. Yes, I know there's like an alien head of the spaceship in Predator 2 or something like that, but the idea of having the two products in the same medium and the same material together, that comes to Dark Horse. And Dark Horse did this because they had the rights. Literally, that's the reason why they put the two together. Not necessarily because they thought they'd be good stories. They had the rights. Let's mix and match. And honestly, as a comic series, it worked. Now, one thing why I think that the Alien vs. Predator movies were less effective, less, I'll say it, good, is because they chose in the movies to set them in the current time, or the current time that the movie came out. Now, the AVP comic books start out in the timeline thoroughly of Aliens. It picks up from the thoroughly established 23rd century timeline that was in the Dark Horse Alien comics. So not only do we have the Predators being high-tech, and a higher tech, though, than the humans are also space travelers. And it's going to take events that took place, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, such as the overrun of the planet Earth by the aliens, is going to be part of the storyline that is going to be in the Aliens and Predators. Now, they do, and I think one of my favorite Predator stories does take place in different periods of times. One of my favorite is about an ex-CIA team that's retired and running a paintball place where people go to play paintball in New Jersey, and a Predator stumbles across it. So they do jump in time in the Predator series, but the Predator versus Alien are going to be pretty thoroughly stuck in the existing timeline of Aliens. And there will be some short stories and some one-off, but the first real big Alien versus Predator story is going to be set on a planet called Ryushi. And it's going to involve an human who is named, ready for me to mess this up, Machiko Noguchi. And she works for the Chigusa Corporation. And Chigusa is one of the rival corporations against, literally in some of the stories, some of these corporations are militantly against Weyland Yutani. And she's sort of the corporate liaison. She's the corporate manager of this colony that gets attacked by aliens and then the predators, and she teams up and becomes a human, but works with the predators to hunt down these aliens. And it's a good, strong story. A lot more high tech, and I think maybe that's one of the reasons why I don't know why they decided to do AVP in modern times, but it's a good, strong book that I would say is better than what the movies that we got. Now, in 1993 to 94, Chris Claremont, who's most known for, you know, his work on the X-Men and Marvel, did an Alien vs. Predator series that I love. And it was Aliens vs. Predator, The Dangerous of the Species. Now, if you know your Kipling, The Most Dangerous of the Species, of course, is female. And this has some, including a Japanese, basically covert op spy trying to put things together, a Chimera, which is basically an android that uses parts of alien technology that has appeared in other Dark Horse Presents, a big giant queen, and of course a predator. And by far, I think that was my favorite. The art was beautiful. It was fun. It was exciting. It was sexy. Unfortunately, like a lot of the aliens and Dark Horse stuff in the 90s, it kind of runs out of steam at the end. Now, to be fair, a lot of things, whether, you know, not Dark Horse or Predator or Alien related, run out of steam. And I remember there were some delays, but it came out like every other month. And I remember waiting. Now, I was going to get, waiting for the new copy with the new sexy woman fighting an alien cover. And I loved it, despite, you know, like I said, it's not perfect. Another one that, of course, is really being kind of really set Dark Horse up for the Alien universe is Colonial Marines, where a lot of things are going to be introduced in this comic book series that in some ways are canon. One, the big one is that, and we see this in the third Alien, that whatever the facehugger implants in, it affects what the baby alien grows into. So like in Alien 3, the movie, it's a dog, and so it's a dog-like alien. Well, this one, they have implant like whale-like creatures. And so there's sea monsters. And it's basically this completely, I want to say, just rough around the edges, just give in, don't have any military discipline unit that is put together with a tough-as-nails officer to basically come together and stop the alien menace. And it has, like, Vasquez's sister and quite a few things. My favorite character was Sergeant Nylon, who was sort of a single mother but had gone out to basically do her duty, and she was one of the one soldiers, was trying to keep discipline and unit cohesion together. It's an alien comics, don't expect a happy ending. And in parallel, they Dark Horse did a whole bunch of books, and I found a bunch of these books actually at a used bookstore, so I was able to get a whole bunch of them about a decade ago. And they hold up. It's a great universe. In a lot of ways, I think it's better than the one we got cinematically. Great books, great comics. If you get a chance, some of the first Alien ones were black and white, and then they were redone as color. There's a lot more detail and fine art in the black and white ones. So if you get a chance, especially the first Alien comics, you can still find beat-up copies every once in a while. It's worth getting the black and white one. And there is so much world building, and it's just, I think it's amazing. Now, we do have a problem because a lot of the original comics, besides, you know, Marines, which were had relatives, but a lot of the early comics centered around Ripley and Newt and Hicks, who all die in the third movie. Sorry, spoilers. So how do they deal with this? So the Hicks character and the Newt character are renamed Billy and some guy's name. And it's okay. I mean, it bothered me. Some of the older stuff had that. And then they explain basically that the Ripley character is not really Ripley. It's an android who has Ripley's memory and thinks that she's Ripley. I mean, the retcon does undercut it, but they had to do something. I like to think of them as being in a separate universe, but, you know, just amazing world building. And one of the things that they did, I think, was a great job. Really my favorite part of the first movie that is completely retconned away with Prometheus, and that is the space jockey. I mean, even as, you know, this kid who hadn't seen the movie, I wouldn't see it for a decade, I saw from magazines and ads and, you know, pictures, is that very scary scene of Lambert, Dallas, and King going into that horseshoe-shaped alien ship and finding the body of the space jockey, which is this sort of skeleton-boned alien. And that's what it's always been until Prometheus. And Prometheus says, oh no, it was just a helmet or it was just a suit. And I think that Ridley Scott, it's your baby. You can do whatever you want. You need my permission. But that was my favorite part, was that there was this other alien race. And I'm not going to say the engineers aren't interesting, but they're not as interesting as the space jockeys. And we get kind of this conclusion, sort of galactic horror level, of who the space jockeys are in the Alien comic books by Dark Horse, where they are very much elephantine, and they wear space suits, and they have guns, and they have one gun and that can just eliminate tons of aliens just in this field, and they have psychic powers, and they're not the good guys. They're cosmic horror. They're as bad as the Predators. They're bad as the aliens. And fortunately, they don't intercept with humans very much, but they destroy the President of the United States. And then they kind of step back, because I think Dark Horse realized that, you know, that they would take the series in a different way. But I love them up to that point. And then they go back into the cosmos, just like, you know, the elephant thing in, you know, Conan does. Why? We don't know. They don't think like us, and they want to know that we suck. And they could destroy us if they want, but they got other things to do. They are so alien, and they are just amazing. And I don't like the fact that they got basically replaced in the official canon in the movie with the engineers. Bring back the space jockeys. Okay, next we're going to talk about Alien. Not Alien 3 that y'all saw in the movies, but what is known as William Gibson's Alien 3. So, Gibson had been about a decade or so after he had written Neuromancer, and he is being lauded, rightfully so, as the newest, smartest, sharpest, you know, thing going in modern science fiction. And so Fox says, hey, why don't you write Alien 3 for us? And he did. So what Wayne Gibson didn't get is when a movie company comes up to you, when you're an unexperienced screenwriter, but a hot author, and they say, hey, let's write a movie. William Gibson thought they meant, hey, let's write a movie. No, they wanted him to come up with some ideas and, you know, give him some ideas, maybe some characters, some workarounds, and then they would make the movie. And Gibson then shows up on the door with his, like, 200-page script all written out. And it is something. It's amazing. I actually eat a lot of weight. So there's, like, Space Cold War and this ship that the Sulaco doesn't crash and burn up on this prison planet, killing everybody, but it crashes on the space mall. And instead of Newt and Hicks dying in the opening credits, which nobody really thought would happen when they were doing Alien stuff before Alien 3, it's Ripley who is in a coma. And Gibson is told to write this way because nobody knows if Sigourney Weaver will come back or if they can afford to have her back. And so they're basically told to write her out of most of the story and we'll work around it. And Fox just looked at this and they said, thank you very much, Mr. Gibson. Please take your check and go away. And I don't know how much they paid. So Gibson eventually publishes online as where you can read the script, and eventually, again, our heroes, Dark Horse Comics, comes out and makes William Gibson Alien 3 a comic book. And it is a great graphic novel. Now, it's a great story, it's great background, great world building. It does have this one part that is utterly, utterly scary. And not only, and it's so scary, it is. It's just, and I'll just describe it a little bit here. but it's also kind of uncanonical. And where basically these spores come out, hit this human being, and he turns into an alien. Honestly, as this other form of reproduction, it makes kind of more sense than just the fact that the way that they do in the movies, at least with biomass. And a lot of people would have screamed and said, this is, no, you know, this is not the way it was done in the other two movies. Absolutely true. But it's not that far of a heresy than, say, the black oil, which from, you know, Prometheus. And honestly, black oil, besides the look of the Prometheus, I think the Prometheus is an amazing set. It looks like a spaceship that cost $1 billion. The black oil is kind of the most interesting part, even though it's an X-Files ripoff. So I think that even if these drastic changes, I really would like to have seen it made a movie, but we'll settle with it becoming a graphic novel. So the next thing I want to talk to about that is, as far as I'm concerned, canon, but maybe less known, is the Alien shorts. And I'm like this evangelist for the Alien shorts. That anybody who will sit and talk to me about aliens, I will tell about how they need to see these. And now I'm amazed. They're free. How many few people have seen them? I came out in 2019 at the 40th anniversary, where Fox, and I think it was Toge, I'm not sure the name of the gaming company, I can pronounce it, basically funded six independent filmmakers to make six, 7 minute shows. Movies set in the Alien universe, and they are between very good and amazing, and they are just incredible. And there's six of these shows, and one of the things that they did require was that all the characters would have to be blue collar. They would be, you know, go back to hearken to the original Alien franchise, where they were, for lack of a better word, space trekkers. So that meant you couldn't have Marines. They were, you know, there are crews, there is a colonist, there are miners, there are people who work at a company store. There's a person that maintains a greenhouse on another planet. And so the requirements were that they would have to be a blue-collar background, and that they would also have to display different stages of the alien. So there's some facehugger, there's, you know, full body, but they are amazingly done pieces of work. You can see every one of them on YouTube for free. The first one is called Containment, where four survivors of a ship that's infested with aliens have to sort of put all the clues together before the ship is completely destroyed what happened. Another one is called Specimen. And I love how the directors and the crew, they work. There's only two human characters and a canine character, and it's not much of a spoiler here if I say there's an alien in it of some sort. But with such little, with lighting and background, they just do an amazing job. It really is an excellent episode. Another episode is called Harvest. And I have to admit, I kind of get that a little bit confused with the first one. They're both good episodes, but they have questions and sort of escaping from a damaging ship. And the trope of the evil corporation is very, very strong in these. Another real good one is Ore, where miners encounter an alien, and they realize that if they don't stop it, it's going to basically go after and kill their loved ones. And sort of, not that it's meant to be, but it's kind of sort of this workers versus management story, or it becomes an allegory, but it's a great episode. Another is Night Shift, where again we see sort of the dangers of the corporation in the form of a company store. But by far, my favorite by far is Isolation. Just an amazing story about a woman who is left abandoned on a ship with an alien, and amazingly well acted. Again, only two humans the whole time. Minimalist sets, but it works, and it works so well. So if you by chance have an opportunity, they're free. You can watch them all on YouTube. Just type in Alien Shorts, and well, you might get an ad from Amazon about, you know, silk boxers with aliens on them, but you know, the 40th anniversary, they're only about 7 or 8 minutes each, and there's six of them, so you could watch basically six great movies in an hour. A lot more things. Another thing that out there for Alien, another thing I really like is the new Alien RPG by Free World League. And it's kind of a hard sell because it's a hard thing to do campaigns on, and it's got a high mortality rate, but that's sort of the fun. Definitely worth it if you get an opportunity to play in a one-shot. Simple rules. There's also a lot of video games coming out. But I wanted to share with some of the lesser known, yet still some of my favorite, of the Alien franchise. And I hope that you really enjoyed this show. I almost said we're going to go back to the main show, but we're our own little separate show now. I hope you enjoyed it, and hope that you tune in next week. So thank you very much for listening.